Maybe.
Hi there. Welcome to the first virtual edition of What Our Parents Said. I am Jack Woods. With me, as always, is Landon Wood and our little mascot, Henny. She's paying $100 every single month to listen to this podcast. It's very exclusive. We're rolling in cash right now. With us today is Lane Dixon, the person who helped me write my essay to get to DePaul, where I've been able to make connections with Landon and Henny. Lane, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. How about you guys?
I'm pretty well.
I am having a pretty good, what is it, Wednesday night? I'm losing track of time.
Yeah, Wednesday night. Solid
Wednesday.
Middle.
Yeah, you know, Wednesday, Sunday, whatever. It's all the same, 2020.
Well, we wanted to talk about something that I would consider to be pretty heavy. We're going to be talking about trauma tonight, as previously teased in other episodes. Landon, what did your parents teach you about trauma?
Most subjects I kind of talk about what my parents did say, but I think trauma is one of the ones that wasn't really touched on. It was kind of talked about behind the scenes, or it was implied at least, but I don't have much memory of talking about trauma.
All right. Well, Lane?
Yeah. You know, like obviously my family, my extended family and my parents' background, like there were the stories that, you know, we would talk about at Thanksgiving, like side tables and, you know, stuff like that. But it was more just like, did you know that this happened? But it was never like, you know, this is how we dealt with it, or hey, you know,
yeah.
Especially like the big things, it was just sort of like, we don't talk about that, and do not ever bring this up in mixed company. But then, you know, when my dad got sick, he passed away almost 10 years ago from cancer, and obviously like the few months he was in hospice, we got to have a lot of fireside chats about that. And there was a little bit more said, but I mean, I was 30 at the time, but when I was a child, no, we were the model family for sweeping things under the rug.
Yeah.
Well, maybe a better question would be, when traumatic events happen throughout your life, how did you deal with those events? How did your parents, sort of guide you to deal with those events? Because I have a few examples myself, but actually go ahead.
I do want to wait and ask a quick question, because okay, I think this will really influence the discussion.
Okay.
So did you have any did you have any parents or any like family members pass away? Not parents.
Yeah. My mom's dad died, both of my dad's parents died, and my dad's stepmother died. I'm unsure of my mom's mom, but that is a story that I am not going to tell in public. So
yeah. Lynn?
You know, no, I had not experienced any like major loss of family members other than my grandparents, which, you know, until I think I was in grad school when that happened. And I was really close with them, but I mean, it was expected. It was one of those things. My dad getting melanoma when I turned 29 and he was 57, that kind of came out of nowhere. That was curveball. My sister was 19. So, you know, she definitely experienced that a lot differently than I did.
Yeah.
Well, that reminds me of kind of a funny story about my grandfather's funeral. So I had just gotten my license right when granddad died. And for some reason, dad wanted me to drive one of the cars to the graveyard where we were going to put granddad in. And where I come from, houses typically have 2-lane driveways, right? In West Tennessee, where my grandfather is buried, houses have 1-lane driveways. So my dad took a wrong turn on the way to the graveyard, and he tried to turn around in a driveway. So he goes into one lane, And then me just not really paying much attention, I just kind of drive and the car goes into a ditch. Keep in mind, this is the day that my dad is burying his father. And my sister, myself, and my mom had to get out in our nice funeral clothes and push the car out of a muddy ditch. luckily the tires like didn't mess up or anything, but yeah. My sister, who was riding with my dad after we got the car out of the driveway on the way to the graveyard, said, "We are never going to laugh about this ever again."
Well, we are right now, so sorry. Sorry, Dad.
But
hey, you know what? It's those moments of levity sometimes that you need on a really hard day.
But it just kind of put things into perspective, at least for a little bit, because, I mean, I'm 16 years old. I just got my license, and I just crashed one of my father's cars on the way to his father's funeral.
Wow.
So I do think that in the context of trauma, when it rains, it pours. It just feels like when traumatic events happen, you just really can't stop the little fires from happening. It just kind of feels like everything builds up. I don't think that trauma is necessarily one large event. I think it's one large event and then a collection of small events afterwards.
Yes and no. I would beg to differ a little bit. I think that the way that we process trauma and the way that we look to those that we're closest to help us process that can start maybe ignite some of those other fires if we don't have the right tools or if those people are not well equipped to support us in those moments. But I would beg to differ to say that the big trauma is typically those are the ones that keep us up at night and that we continually revisit. It's not so much the after effects or the aftershocks. Just in my experience.
With that big trauma, it's more probably about what kind of mindset were you in when that happened to you? Like if you're super negative and you are like really affected by the trauma in that exact moment, like, wow, this took me completely by surprise, did not expect this to happen to me, then like that can impact how everything else could seem like it's not happening, like not going to your favor, like everything around that's happening right after that death, it really sucked. It could also be like a big traumatic experience that, I mean, you kind of expected it to come, so when it does come, it really hurts, but.
Well, now, do you think maybe to establish our vernacular of what we're considering trauma to be is important and distinguishing that is very much on a spectrum. You know, for one person, what is traumatic to them may be very different than somebody else based on their upbringing or their experiences and their circumstances. You know, I grew up very, I would say privileged. And pretty blessed for most of my life until my 20s and then just the proverbial shit hit the fan in my 20s and all of a sudden I was like, oh, you thought that was trauma? Here's what it is. And that definitely shifted my perspective and seeing like, oh, okay. But also understanding, like, you know, I'm a mother now and what is traumatic to my kids is, I'm like, oh, come on, guys. But I have to understand that in it's their relevant. Minds, you know, this is very traumatic. Yeah. And that's something I'm coming to realize as I'm working through my own trauma is seeing that things that maybe I didn't perceive as being traumatic, they were just part of the narrative in my childhood, actually did, in fact, shape me in that way.
Yeah. It's like my stepdad described it to me, like, oh, every year there's a bigger problem the next year because you haven't dealt with it before. So you look back and you're like, oh, I should have known that problem. Like, that was traumatic, but I'm fine now. But this one right now, this one is crazy. I can't get through this. It's the biggest problem I've ever been through. And then 2 years, 3 years down the line, you have to deal with a different kind of problem. like, oh my God, it's a big one again. I don't know.
I wanted to pose this question to you all. Did you ever have a moment of clarity during what we would describe as a traumatic moment where we can step outside of ourselves and say, this is really messed up and this should not be happening?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think kind of how it goes back on the spectrum. My kind of definition of trauma is it shapes you in the long term, in the fact that you may have to deal with it like subconsciously almost later on, where it impacts you in ways that you don't truly realize that it did when it actually happened. That's how I thought traumatic was.
You know, and to speak to that, this book that I'm reading right now, it didn't start with you, by Mark Wallen. You know, he talks about how trauma is actually, it's separated into two different ways, that mostly language itself is the defining feature of whether or not it's going to stay in our consciousness or in our subconsciousness. And that if we're able to create a narrative around it, if we're able to give it language, then we're able to move past it a lot faster. But that's why things that happen in our very early years, from birth until maybe 3 or 4, typically are in our subconscious, because we didn't have the language to help ourselves cope with that. Similarly, you know, events in our adulthood that are especially traumatic, that put us in a state of shock where we can't form language around it. It goes back into those places in the recesses of our minds. And that's when it starts creeping up in other areas, such as anxiety, PTSD, insomnia, depression, like a lot of other, even physical ailments, stuff like that. So I thought that was really interesting too, to kind of speak to your point.
Yeah, I think I've heard that trauma stays in the body, right? So
there is another amazing book. It's called The Body Keeps the Score. And it's about how literally our bodies hold trauma. And it's not just in the muscles and everything, but literally in it. And love the science in this book, because it really breaks down like the DNA and RNA structure and how, you know, trauma, energy, everything, it shifts. Even though we're not going to change the sequence of our DNA, we can change how it is manifested and how it represents itself. And especially if you think about in utero, you know, with you, you know, you're sharing a body with your mother, you're sharing the same blood systems and the same food systems and everything. And all of that is creating your cellular structures. And so if something traumatic was happening with your mom, you know, during pregnancy, or she was undergoing like that can affect the way that your DNA and your RNA is expressed, which
sounds like a molecular version of evolution. That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's really cool.
But yet we're still constantly changing. It's not like it's some like static thing, like, okay, this is what we're born with.
Yeah.
You know, we may be predisposed to certain things. The whole point of the book is for us to start digging in and to start reshaping those patterns in our RNA and our DNA and the way it is expressed, and that we don't have to just be a slave to the trauma that happened to us or that happened to our parents or our grandparents. They did some amazing studies with the children and grandchildren of Holocaust survivors, and with mothers who were pregnant during 9/11. And they were able to actually have the scientific evidence to show that this trauma was carried on in generations, and that they were able to kind of work with them and alleviate a lot of the issues that were happening as a result of that.
Does that mean that like 2001 babies and ones that happened right before that, and that like 4-year gap, should seriously like consider therapy?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't I think, why not? I think everybody needs therapy, but everybody needs an objective third party to talk to. But it's, you know, that's a really great point, Landon.
Yeah. I've heard some theories that the 2001, like 9/11, actually physically impacted some people. Like, that's the type of things that can actually form generations. So that's because it's a altered state of understanding, because you, everybody's developmental patterns actually revolved around that event. So
you guys are, I definitely, as a junior in high, or a junior in high school, a junior in college, then I saw that, I witnessed that firsthand. And I'm telling you that this year we're witnessing it again. Like, everything with around this pandemic, you know, I mean, everything about this year has been like life altering and life shifting. And this, we're seeing a change in our collective consciousness, because for the first time, we're all experiencing the same trauma at the same time. You know, on 9/11, there was that sort of collective solidarity where it was like, well, at least we all are going through this together. You know, we're all grieving together. And there was this sense of unity. I don't know that we have that unity right now, but at least we all know that, like, literally, and that's what I've told my kids when they were, you know, getting down during the quarantine and everything. I'm like, just understand that, like, kids in India, kids in China, kids in Africa, like, every single child on the face of this planet, every single adult is experiencing the exact same feelings and emotions that we are right this moment. So we're not alone.
No, go ahead.
I took a class about, I forget the name of the class, but we ended up studying the actual, it was conflict studies. It was the intro to conflict studies. And so we went through and figured out what like privilege was. We figured out what advantages happened in different areas, and how to like understand what a conflict truly is. And we did case studies. Well, my professor at the time was like, hey, listen, the biggest issues that we're going to go through is that the entire global system is going to collapse and change, right? And so he's talking about all this stuff, and it's crazy. And I read a paper that directly for like half a page said, look out for infectious diseases, because they're going to increase more with the way that we're changing our food. So giant impactful diseases will spread through the earth, like the world, and actually impact how we all go through world events. I was like, wow, that's a big prediction. 3-4 weeks later, we're getting sent home from school. And so, and that class kind of revolved around it. I ended up writing my final paper on the impact of coronavirus around the entire globe. I focused on India and their policies and all the issues that were going on there during the pandemic. And it was like perfect timing, and it's a great way to turn a negative event into something to learn more about the world around you.
Well, in a way, the coronavirus pandemic was, it was traumatic because we had our life altered. Is she frozen? Is she frozen?
I think so.
Hello? Lane? Perhaps? Hello? Well, not us.
I paused the recording.
What?
Pause the recording.
Okay, we got her back. Yeah, but the coronavirus pandemic was, it was traumatic in the sense that it changed how we looked at ourselves. One of my future mother-in-law, I guess I should say, told me a story about like this ancient Egyptian goddess who was like this great warrior queen and advisor before she was queen, and like she was taken to a dungeon. Anyways, the point of the story was that the coronavirus stripped us down to who we were. So no longer was I Jack the sports reporter, or Jack the baseball player, or Jack, you know, the podcaster. I was Jack. And who is Jack? What's Jack about? And it really gave me this opportunity to discover things about myself that I didn't really like, and I unearthed some things about myself that were really traumatic and kind of repressed down by just, okay, if you just put your head down and work and do all these things, all these emotions and feelings, you can just ignore them, push them aside because you're focused on this. So in a way, the coronavirus was traumatic for me. Anyone else?
Was it traumatic, or did you start to deal with things that were traumatic?
Well, it was traumatic in that I had to deal with it because I've never been in a position where I could sit down and deal with it. And also, I was unearthing some traumatic events.
I would say yes to both, Landon. I would say that, you know, this whole existential, oh my God, we have no idea what this disease is doing, who it's affecting, how we're going to prevent it. Like, there was a good 2 months there. What was it, like March and April, that we were all just like, I mean, we were like hosing our groceries down, man. Like, we were scared to death. And that in itself is really traumatic. But at the same time, and I said this many times, that it forced us to slow down in so many ways, because we have been so consumed the past, I would venture to say at least 10 years with technology, with social media, with immediate gratification, just everything is at your fingertips. You can order something, it's on your doorstep in 2 hours, blah, blah, blah. You can connect with anybody, you can go anywhere. And then all of a sudden, it was like comfortable to sit by yourself and to really sit for an extended period of time. That's why meditation is so freaking difficult. That's why, like, and we were, you know, in a really like broad sense, we were all forced to sit and meditate collectively. And that, of course, that's going to bring up the stuff that we have used busyness as a placebo to avoid, you know, to sit there and treat. Like, oh, I don't have to deal with this. I can just, and I do it too. I am just as guilty. Pull up my phone, scroll through mindlessly, and all of a sudden there went 2 hours, you know, of me popping off on Twitter. And all of a sudden I have not actually thought for myself all freaking day. And then that turns into weeks and months and years. And all of a sudden you're stuck inside for months with nothing but yourself. For some people who, you know, who were singles and living alone, and I know that that was a huge struggle for a lot of people, you know, especially the elderly, of course, you know, they're not quite as hype on the social media, but I know that for me, like, that's really when I started doing a lot of digging into myself, because eventually you have to look at yourself in the mirror, you know, and go, is this good? Am I happy? Am I content? And start taking inventory.
Something that it taught me for sure was that sitting down with that quiet space is really important. So I ended up taking like a meditation course, and I've learned exactly what you've talked about. So I got to the point where I was meditating like an hour every morning for a solid like 2 months. And it just completely count your breathing, sit in a quiet room, put your plugs in so you can't hear people. And so just sitting with that complete alone time, it's really important. And the things that I've learned while meditating, you just described them. Like, all of the social media is just completely, you just give your time away in response for like, it's not a drug, but it's like gambling. You know, you give your time away so that you don't have to think about it for a while. So.
Well, and we don't have to go down that rabbit hole since we're talking about trauma, but I mean, I'm sure you guys have watched The Social Dilemma on Netflix. Well, you definitely should, Landon. Definitely should. And that is just even illuminating. Even though you know this stuff in your mind, you know what algorithms are, you know all these things, but just seeing the data right there in front of you, like, My son is the biggest techie gamer person ever. He's 11. And normally you could pry YouTube out of his cold dead hands. He watched it and he looked at me and he's like, I'm not okay with this. And he's kind of let that marinate. And 3 days later, he came to me and he goes, look what I'm doing. Deleted his whole YouTube.
Wow.
I was like, whoa. So if Jackson can do it, anybody can. Like, yeah, the social dilemma is legit. It's a good documentary.
Well, kind of reverting back to the discussion of trauma, I remember just kind of off of a general feeling that I had, whenever traumatic events would happen, as a boy trying to become a man, my job was to just push it down and help other people, right? You can deal with your own thing in your own time, but you got to be the man. You got to, especially at my grandfather's funeral, it was just like, you know, you got to be the man. Hell, even the, I don't know if I should say this, even the person who said the prayers before put Granite in the ground came up to me afterwards and told me that I needed to do a good job of taking care of my mother and taking care of my sister in this hard time. My sister standing right there, by the way, fuming red, like so pissed off because this is just overtly sexist. And just talking about how I need to take responsibility. And then he turns to my sister and he goes, now, young lady, I heard that you are a tremendous singer and I hope we get to hear you sing one day. And then he walked off.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
And it's like,
the one thing I know about
responsibility, yeah. Like, I didn't want the responsibility of dealing with other people's problems. Like, that's,
well, and the one thing that
dramatic as that is enough.
People don't know what to say. We could have a whole different podcast about how as Americans, we avoid the topic of death. And we don't actually talk about the grieving process. And
I'm plugging Midnight Gospel on Netflix.
Yes. And so, trust me, like, walking my father through that transition, like, people just don't know what to say at all. And it just comes out wrong. And you just have to, at some point, like, you have a visceral reaction to it at the moment, but you just have to shake it off and be like, bless your heart, you don't know. you did your best. It wasn't good enough, but I see where it came from. but yeah, I mean, I hear you. Like, my son, I noticed a major change in him when he had just turned 6 when his dad and I divorced. And he had just started first grade and his sister was 3. And so she, you know, she was just, you know, in 3-year-old land. But all of a sudden, just instinctively, I never once made him feel like he had to be the man of the house or anything. But instinctively, all of a sudden, he started like trying to show up and be like some grown up, some dad, or like some equal to me. And I was like, oh, no, sir, we're good. I'm the parent. Sit back down and just be a kid. And it's okay, but he still has that, I think, that protective instinct, or, you know, and I don't know if that's something that, like, is just inherent in men's DNA or whatever, or if it's just, I feel like he wasn't preached that for 6 years, but at the same time, like, I think that's just something that, I don't know.
I don't think that's like a boys versus girls thing. I think that's honestly a hierarchy thing, like age. So I'm the oldest of 8, and let's see, I live with two, I have a 4th half sister and then 4 step siblings. I'm the oldest of all of them. So with that, what I learned as the oldest sibling in that situation was kind of just like, okay, when crazy stuff happens, then if you're okay personally, you can help take care of others. Like, that's just how it goes. I was like super bossy and super parenty to my younger brother simply because I was like, come on guys, we're gonna figure this out so it's easier on mom. And that's what I was thinking when I was young as an older kid at like 8.
I mean, I did the same thing, but my sister and I were 10 years apart, are 10 years apart. So I was 10 when she was born. So basically, like, it wasn't just assumed. I was just told, like, you're going to take care of her. Wow, so yeah. I was her mother until, like, well, until we started setting boundaries a few years ago. But yeah, I mean, those lines got blurry where it's like, okay, I'm her sister, I'm her best friend, but I'm also kind of her mom. And, you know, I used to ground her. I would discipline her. I would, you know, do all those things. And it does make things very murky in the family dynamic that way.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that. I don't know. I don't know if it was instinctive or if maybe I saw something on television or if maybe if it was just kind of assumed that, you know, as a man, you have to push things down and deal with it on your own time. And as a result of it, I kind of see the similarities in how I deal with trauma versus how my father deals with trauma. You know, I remember my father, he's a guy that needs to do things, just needs to do things when like life gets really hard. And he's an auto junkie. He loves fixing up cars and all that. So pretty much every day when he got home, I mean, we would see him and we would talk to him and he would laugh and joke around. But I mean, when he needed alone time, he would just go out to the garage. And I mean, it was really heartbreaking to see that. And I sort of saw myself dealing with my granddad's death in the same way. I just kind of reverted back to baseball habits. Just, you know, put your head down, sweat out all the feelings, you know.
Yeah. I think that's our parents' generation too. You know, like even now my mom, like, you know, she'll see me write or, you know, publish something and she loves it. She's like, I could never, never do that. Like, I could never tell people like what I'm feeling or thinking or anything. And my dad was, I mean, the man was also obsessed with cars and stuff like that. So my dad was constantly in his garage and or renting a cherry picker to paint the exterior of our house or, you know, anything he could do to not sit still and actually have to sit with himself. And I say all this with love and just understand that, like, yes, my dad has passed. I love him very much, but it was a very, very complicated, he was a complicated man and had a very complicated relationship. And that we thankfully got a lot of peace with in those last few years. So I can say all this, you know, clearly and without guilt or anything, but and I'll just drop a bomb here for you. And I think Jack probably already knows this. I know his mom and I discussed this before because I'm kind of friends with her a little bit. But in college, when I was a senior in college, a man came in my house one night, my apartment. I lived alone, and he raped me. And that was my first experience with trauma. So it just so happened that my parents were in town that weekend. They had come in town, or they were supposed to come in town the next morning to look at a boat. And we were supposed to have lunch, and I called them from the UT Medical Center and said, hey, I'm not going to be able to make it for lunch. Can you meet me here instead? And so they did. And, you know, they came into the room and everything, and I talked to them and kind of told them what I was able to articulate at that point. And my dad, I'll never forget it for the rest of my life. Like we talked about it on his deathbed too. He looked at me and he said, the best thing that you could possibly do is to forget that this ever happened. And that's the last time the only time we talked about it. So, yeah, I was definitely taught to sweep things under the rug, and to just push on. And in my family, you know, we covered up all of our trauma with success. We're all perfectionists, and so we work really, really, really hard to be the best at whatever it is that we're doing. And that was instilled in us from my dad, who was extremely successful, but that comes at an expense. And thankfully, you know, after he passed on, my mom and my sister and I, we all went to therapy, sometimes together, sometimes separately. And we've all gotten to a really good place with it. But I can tell you that there is nothing more hurtful than to have the person that you thought was supposed to have your back. You know, the one person that the knight in shining armor that you grew up with that just said, pretend like this didn't happen. And, you know, what a lot of people also don't talk about with trauma is the shame that accompanies it. Because a lot of trauma does happen around very taboo things, whether it's sexual or it's just anything. But there's usually mistakes that are made on some parts, and or just even, you know, like for me, it was that, well, why didn't I choose a different shirt to wear that night? Or why it was my friend's dad's friend that had come, and they were staying downstairs, and he snuck out in the middle of the night and did it. So I had met him that day, but I didn't know him. So just to give a little clarity on that. But y'all, I mean, that messed me up for years. I took that into my marriage. I took that into everything, and all it did was compound that shame and having the people around you that you're supposed to trust and to lift you up. Just not only was I feeling shameful about it, but they were wanting to put it in a corner in like this little box too. And it just, all it did was reaffirm every bad thing that I thought about myself for so long. So that was my first experience with trauma, and that's what my parents told me about trauma.
Wow.
This is going to seem like really bad timing. If you hear music in the background, it's not us. For some reason...
You're in a dorm, honey, right?
For some reason, the boys wanted to throw down on a Wednesday night at... What is it? 11 p.m. So I
20.
Right. Once you said, and this is a really an important point, I thought, fuck. Well, they're gonna hear the music, and that's gonna. Okay.
I don't hear the music, but.
Okay. Well.
That's how do you feel about that advice? Like, do you think, as you said, that complicated the problem? Or
yes.
Didn't it help you deal with a traumatic event?
It just sort of perpetuated the schema that I had already been taught. Yeah. You know, I mean, I don't know why I was surprised by that advice, because honestly, that's kind of the way that I was raised anyway. So
yeah.
I think I just thought with the severity of the issue or of the circumstance that it might be a little different. But.
Because,
you know, it changed when I became a parent. Yeah. I'll be honest with you, like becoming my own parent or becoming a parent to my own children was healing in itself, because now, like, I understand, like, where they were coming from in a lot of places. But at the same time, I'm like, oh, no, no, no. And it's very healing to be able to parent my kids in a very different way.
Break the cycle.
So a lot of therapy. A lot of therapy. Like combined amount of hours of therapy or years. We're looking at like probably close to 10 years between the age of 21 and now. I'll just admit I'm 39. I'll be 40 in a few months.
You don't look a day over 27.
I was going to say that the kind of don't deal with it is something that really stuck out to me in your like sharing is that cover it up with success. So I didn't realize that's what I had done, but when you said it, it kind of clicked for me. So I had one grandpa, my mom's dad die suddenly. I had my dad's mom die suddenly. And then I had my dad's stepmom die like planned, not planned, but expected, because she had cancer. She had lung cancer from smoking so much. My grandpa died because of an aneurysm, and his blood was so thin because he was always so drunk. So he was a severe alcoholic, and that's basically what killed him. And then my grandma, my dad's mom, died extremely suddenly. I got hit by a semi, or no, it was a dump truck. Got hit by a dump truck because she didn't stop all the way through a stop sign. And it was just like instantaneous gone. So all this happened below the age of 12.
Whoa.
Yeah. And so those all happened. One of them actually triggered my dad. The sudden death of the mom triggered my dad to stop being an addict, like severe drug addict. So my grandma died suddenly. She convinced my dad to like stop being in jail, stop going down that path. He became completely clean. I missed him for like a Christmas, and that was all that happened. He like turned around in a year. It was insane. I've never even heard a story like that before, completely by himself. I don't know how he did it, but so that happened. My mom's dad died suddenly from alcoholism and then cancer from smoking their entire life. But I think one of the most important things for me during that time was that there was no hide your emotions. There wasn't a single, this is bad. I did watch other people deal with them incorrectly. Like I watched my mom drink way too much or something on those lines, like just very bad reactions I saw from people. But whenever I was asked like, how are you feeling? What are you doing? If I was like, I'm not doing well at all, like this is making me really sad. I miss them. This is so sudden, or anything like 7-year-old talk. My mom would talk to me about it. We'd pray and just talk. And I think that was one of the most important things that my mom did to help me deal with that. Just asked me to talk about it. And I think she did the same with my brothers. But it was such a traumatic event for a family.
Wow. Yeah. I'm so sorry, Landon. Like, wow, that is so much for your family to go through in one period of time. Like, and I love the fact that your sweet little 7-year-old self was still so vulnerable that you felt comfortable enough voicing those feelings and that your mom validated them, you know, because I feel like this is the other side of that conversation, because look, we're all going to go through trauma. That's the thing that like, I never realized. And is that I thought that happened to other people first off, because I grew up with relatively like not so big. I mean, I didn't have like major problems growing up. But when I hit my 20s, all of a sudden life was just like, I mean, I mean, we don't have to get into all of it, but in 2008, I had a traumatic car wreck, and and lost my first child in that car wreck, and in utero, I was pregnant. I lost my dad. I got divorced. Like, my 20s were not kind. They were there. They were like, oh, hey, here's your life. And, you know, I got to the point to where, like, I stopped finding joy in life because I was like, well, I mean, what is the point? It's all going to get screwed up anyway. The shoe's going to drop. And I just kept waiting for the next shoe to drop. Like, I couldn't let myself be happy because I knew that something else traumatic was coming down the line. And I'm at the point now where I just understand that that's what life is. That bad shit happens. People get sick. People die. There are bad people in this world that do bad things to good people. And that sucks. And that things happen. And it's just that that's just part of the human experience. Like, we weren't even, we may have grown up with this certain idea of what life is going to be like, but that's not real. And we're not entitled to anything different than the real. And I think that I grew up with this entitlement that, like, well, I deserve to have, like, because I'm a good person, you know, and I deserve to, you know, have this good life and not have people that I love die or have bad things happen to me. And that's just not true. And I think that a big part of preparing ourselves for these things that happen in our lives is talking to ourselves and just understanding that, A, when it does happen, it's not your fault. Well, maybe sometimes it is. If you decide to get behind the wheel of a car and you're drunk, yeah, it is your fault. But for the most part, like, it's not your fault. You couldn't have prevented it. And these things are going to happen to everybody. Going back to the death conversation. And so instead of looking at it as, why is this happening to me? Instead, it's shifting the narrative to, how am I going to handle this?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I think something that's important to know is, I didn't realize this until later, but life is a lot by chance. Like, things happen, things just happen. And that's facts. The only thing you can count on is change. I've rambled about that to him multiple times. The only thing that you can count on is for things to change. And that's for better and for worse. And it's all by chance. And that's good things too. So good things and bad things. And so it becomes more of a, you can choose how to deal with something. You can't choose what happens to you.
Right. So,
and keeping that as you're dealing with issues. Like, did I have control over that? No, I did not. And that's
the whole thing too. And I think that's where I got stuck in my cycle of trauma in my 20s was I felt like, okay, well, if I do this, if I worry this much, or if I do this and this and this, I can control what's going to happen to me.
Yeah.
Well, my divorce just shredded all that. And I finally learned that, no, like, here is the circle of things that I can control. Here's the big, huge circle of things I can't. And where am I putting all my energy? I'm putting it all into this outward space that I cannot control. And so now I've shifted the past, you know, 4 or 5 years very much into, no, my energy goes into the things that I can control. And that has affected so many other places in my life too, my relationships and everything, where I'm not spending it in drama or in, you know, just stuff that doesn't matter. But yeah, I love what you're saying about that. And it's tough though. I mean, because if you ever do, and Jack definitely spoke to that, you know, in speaking about his grandfather's funeral and what, you know, somebody said to him and his sister, like, there are right and wrong things. Like, to your listeners, there are right and wrong things. Please do not ever tell somebody that this is God's plan or that God needed another angel or that blah, blah, blah. No, no, sometimes it just doesn't make sense. And for somebody who was a very God-fearing, I still am, I'm just not organizationally subscribed, but for somebody who grew up very much believing that God was in control, God was going to protect me, blah, 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 I started getting very angry with him because I was like, how dare you? Like, what did I do to you? I've done nothing but just follow every single thing. I am a good human being. And all of a sudden, I was putting all this anger and stuff onto God, who people were telling me that, you know, well, he took this person. He took this person because he had a greater plan. And I'm like, well, that's not my plan. I really like this person, or I really wanted to have that baby. You know, I personally would rather not have somebody come into my house and do that to me to make me stronger. Like, don't say those things to people, you know? And what I realized is this is a whole different shift into, you know, spirituality, but I had to recenter where I was getting my home base and my comfort, because I used to get comfort from God and now I'm very angry at him. So for years and years and years, we didn't speak. Eventually I got to the point to where I realized that it wasn't him. It is random. It's not for a reason. But can he work? Can good come out of these things? Absolutely. Can I grow stronger? Can I learn from it? Absolutely. And can that be part of God? Absolutely. But I'm not going to pin that on him because we have free will. And I'm not going to blame him for it. Instead, like, I see him as sort of a partner in grief that sits with me and cries with me when I'm going through or reprocessing that trauma. And I'm not, the anger is gone. And I see him more as a comforter than I do this puppet master that's taking and plucking people out for the greater good of humanity.
Well, kind of speaking towards that, I was very much like that my freshman and sophomore year of high school. But then junior year, it just occurred to me that I'm not special because I've gone through things. I'm not special because I've been put through a bunch of really crappy situations. I'm not special at all. And it's not God's fault. It's not my fault. It just happens. Like, there's no, you have such little control on it. And to imply that, but still to imply that things just happen to you and you're just a product of everything else going on is also inaccurate, because, you know, like you two have just been saying, it's not what happens to you, it's how you respond to it. And I mean, I won't put you through another agonizing story of driving a car into a ditch on the way to the grandfather's funeral. But, you know, I will say that trauma presents itself in many forms, and trauma can be brought back in the most inconvenient of times. You can experience
an analogy for that.
I got hit by a car within my first 2 weeks of college, and to this day, I'm still overly cautious when crossing a street. Even if I see like the white dude on the little crosswalk, I'm still like, hold on.
I think I remember you tweeting about that.
Yeah, no, it's like Landon said, trauma lives in the body. You don't just get rid of that shit. You learn how to deal with it. You learn how to carry it.
It is visceral, you know, like, and that's why veterans experience PTSD. That's why, you know, 4th of July fireworks trigger a lot of veterans, like, because like, again, going back to that, you know, what Wallen is saying here about the language and the not language, you know, when you're able to process it through language and everything, then you can create a narrative and it's safer. But there's certain things that happen, you know, where you're close to death, you get hit by a car, you get in a very bad car wreck, you go through certain things and your body goes into that fight or flight mode, you know, that shock. And at that point, your brain shuts down. It's just sending that stuff all the way back. We're just trying to like function right now, like putting one foot in front of the other. And so what happens is all those repressed things, your body just stores it and just holds it. And it will come out, like you said, in the most random of times, but your body has to do it. You know, and the thing that I'm learning about this book, I swear, you know, this no, dude needs to like get me to plug him.
Plug, so we appreciate that, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I he needs to give me a plug him, but what I'm learning too, and I was always cognizant of it, but how much we, if you don't deal with it, or even if, okay, even like your parents' patterns of parenting you end up becoming, there's a reason why abusers end up becoming, or people who are abused end up becoming abusers. There's a reason why people who were in abusive relationships continue to go into abusive relationships. It's, so what he posits is that we subconsciously are trying to either right the wrong for that person, or we're trying to right it for ourselves by repeating the exact same behaviors and patterns over and over and over again, even if it's a parent or a grandparent. And holy geez, we won't even get into what I've discovered in the past 48 hours, but it's so illuminating. And there's only so much talk therapy you can do, you know, and talk and digging into your background. You're like, yes, this is my parents, this is the way I was raised. But there's something very different about digging into that like visceral subconscious and understanding why you think the way you do, why you behave the way you do, the patterns that you have in every relationship in your life, and they all stem from trauma or love. It's either one or the other. And just particularly as a parent, that just puts a spotlight on it even more so. I mean, a marriage does quite a bit. A parent, whoo, all of a sudden you're seeing like them parroting the same things back or acting out the same things, and you're like, whoa, man. And either you continue that pattern and you just, you know, put your blinders on and you sweep under the rug, like what my parents did and a lot of parents do, or you dig in and you do the work and you start to try to change that.
Well, this has been a very successful episode of What Our Parents Said. I cannot thank my very special guest, Lane, enough for all of her tremendous insight on trauma. Lane, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on, and thanks for being patient with all the snafus.
You know, it's weird because Landon and I always have the same conversation after each podcast, and it's always either, wow, I'm glad that we had this because I learned something new, or man, I am just really happy to be able to record our friendship developing over a period of time. So I got to say, this was probably the most informative of all the podcasts we've had thus far. So
I could agree with that. Yeah. Thank you, Lane.
No, thank you guys. Thanks for sharing and your vulnerability, and, you know, just keep up the good work. So I really like what you guys are doing here with your podcast.
Well, we appreciate it. Like, subscribe, comment to everything. We don't accept any bills less than 20. So, you know, we gotta buy the pizzas. So, folks, thank you so much for tuning in, and we'll be back next week with some more What Our Parents Said.